that will last for unforeseen decades into the future. They'll move on. They'll move on to some other part of the world which has not been poisoned. But the trouble with that is that there are more and more extremely wealthy people, very wealthy corporations, and there are fewer and fewer places left on planet Earth to run to. And one wonders exactly what's going to happen when there's finally, at last, no place for these people to run and no place to hide. There was a story that came out over the weekend, and a majority of Vancouver City Council members recently announced that they opposed the $110 million terminal. The thing is projected to be capable of processing over 360 barrels of oil a day. 360 barrels of oil a day. Think about that. And America has a school problem. First and foremost, students are now and have been for years trained but not educated. It's why when you walk into pretty much any business, anywhere where people are dealing with the public on a regular basis, if you stray beyond the very narrow confines of that the individual behind the counter, behind the desk, is very specifically trained to do, you'll find that it's a wasteland there. It's an intellectual wasteland. And that whatever you say will be treated as being spoken in a language not known to the individual behind the desk. That's what you get when you have generations who have been trained but not educated. American parents have largely turned over the work of raising a child to be a responsible, well-rounded, well-educated human being to the school system. And when schools fail to accomplish the task, the schools are told that they are failing. And when the schools stand up to the task, that they can be sued by parents who object to their educators' attempt to discipline their errant, truant charges. That's how it really works these days. Take, for example, the parents of a Wilson High School student and lacrosse player who are suing Portland Public Schools because their son was suspended from competition and extracurricular activities. Well, If he'd been suspended from academic activities, yeah, there's a good reason for that. And in many cases across the country, we're seeing these arbitrary suspensions being meted out mostly, for the most part, to African Americans, to Hispanics, to people who have disabilities or minorities. These are the people that generally receive the academic suspensions. But here we have a relatively well-to-do family in Wilsonville, going to Wilson High School. Well, a lacrosse player who has been suspended, apparently for behavior that seems a little bit over the top, from competition extracurricular activities. What's wrong with that? Nothing, but now the school's going to be paying through the nose for failing to do a good job of so-called parenting the child. And a Beaverton company recently installed a pair of owl boxes at the Oregon Department of Corrections gun range in obstacle course out on the edge of Salem. The idea is to kill rodents before they chew up training grounds. Putting owls to work eating rats, mice, and voles is a natural alternative to poisons that could harm the environment. I love it. People with old Social Security debts are getting a reprieve for now. The Social Security Administration had been participating in a program in which thousands of people were having their tax refunds seized to recoup overpayments that happened more than a decade ago. Surprise, surprise for many of these people who are barely scratching by on the small amount that is meted out to them anyway. On Monday, just yesterday, Acting Social Security Commissioner Carolyn Colvin said she was suspending the program while the agency conducts a review. Colvin is sitting in the catbird seat and controlling lives of people who are much weaker and in no position to fight back for what they indeed deserve. Since best-selling author Michael Lewis appeared on 60 Minutes, and he's been all over the New York Times. You cannot pick up a book review without seeing the name Michael Lewis these days, and you certainly can't turn on the telly for any one of the Talking Heads type of programs without seeing Michael Lewis to promote his new book, Flash Boys. It's a fascinating book about young men, generally men, a handful of women as always, from places graduating from institutions like Princeton, Yale, and that so forth, and Penn, of course, Penn State, who make their way or are recruited directly out of academia straight to Wall Street and with the promise of the good life. The good life comes, it turns out, comes at a very, very high price. Michael Lewis is writing in Flash Boys, though, explaining how the U.S. stock market is seriously rigged, and how Brian Katsuyama, the head of IEX, a Canadian in the electronic trading platform, who plays a central role in Lewis's book, did the same, has also been on the circuit, sharing the spotlight with Lewis and drawing a hard, sharp line under the excesses of Wall Street and the players there. Brad himself would appear to be, were it not for the fact that he is in fact Canadian, and he works for a bank that does not have the flash and the sexy glitter of banks on Wall Street. He took the time, he assembled the right people, and he uncovered exactly why is these lightning fast trades are tipping Wall Street well beyond the angle that it has fashioned for itself over these last few decades. And again, it's the super fast trades performed by people who are pretty much gone from the pressure of working in this kind of an environment that has caused what started out as simple banks, but has caused them to grow into monsters like Goldman Sachs. It's worth taking a look at. Lewis and Katsuyama are not the first to blow the whistle on rigged U.S. stock markets. Wall Street insiders and co-founders of Themis Trading literally wrote the book on broken markets in 2012, Wall Street Journal reporter Scott Patterson mapped out the exotic and corrupt order types permitted by stock exchanges and fleeced the little guy in his book, Dark Pool. So yeah, this is an important new finding, but it's not as though it was new in any way, and it's not as though we can really still claim that we didn't see it coming. And that means everybody, not just people on Wall Street, people like you and me, because it is, after all, our money that they're playing with. For the second time in 3 weeks, the United Nations panel sent a loud and clear message that now is the time to divest from fossil fuels. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change released yet another addition to its fifth assessment report this past weekend, and it is indeed an eye-opener. This has been Air Cascadia for Tuesday, April 15, 2014. Janet Anderson engineered the show today. Thanks for that, Janet. And Kathleen Stevenson is, of course, the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned.
Flashpoints, a special edition. We celebrate 65 years of KPFA Pacifica Radio with a powerful and prescient speech by the late and great Gore Vidal, recorded in 1994. Gore Vidal was speaking at a benefit for KPFA and the Middle East Children's Alliance. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Oh, do stay tuned. It's a beauty.
I have a speech for you. It runs about 25 minutes. I'm going to have to read it. I will look up from time to time in order to give an air of spontaneity. I love politicians with written speeches, particularly when they haven't written them themselves or indeed looked at them. Ronald Reagan was standing on one of his campaigns with holding a speech in front of the Liberty Bell in Philadelphia, and the wind came along and speech blew away. He said, "Well, there goes foreign affairs." General Eisenhower always read his speeches with a sense of real discovery. In 1952, we were in one of our numerous wars in Korea, and so he was droning on, and he said, "And if elected president, I will go to Korea." He was elected. He went. So I'm going to give some reflections upon the State of the Union and answer questions, whatever we can do back and forth, once I have spontaneously gone through my written text. You know, I spend a lot of time writing a speech, and it's always the same one. People afterwards say, "You know, you said, I heard you say that 3 years ago." If you find repetitions, just remember that monotony is a sign of sincerity. Last week, I was traveling around Los Angeles with a television crew. The BBC is doing a sort of morbid retrospective of my Hollywood life over the years. And so we were visiting the scenes of my various crimes against what Italians call the 10th muse, and we call the movies. As I had written a number of pictures for MGM in the 1930s, I said, "Let's go over to the Thalberg building, where I had my office." Phone calls were made to the new owners, something called Sony Pictures Entertainment, an optimistic trade name if ever there was one. Not self-fulfilling, as it has so far proven, but no, we could not go onto the lot, we were told. Why not? Well, Sony is trying to emphasize its corporate image, and so no former employee of MGM could come onto the lot, even though 40 years had passed. When it was pointed out that much of Sony's product is being made by former MGM employees, they said, "Well, they can work here, but they can't talk about MGM because we are promoting only Sony." Anyway, we circle the studio lot a number of times in a van, cameras rolling, I chatting away. Then we parked on a side street opposite the studio. A Culver City policeman suddenly appeared. "You can't shoot here," he said. "This is private property." The director said, "But this is a public street." The cop said, "No, this is private property." I said that the street was clearly marked as the property of Culver City. He repeated that it was private property, and so we moved on. I tell this story not to bash a Japanese corporation, particularly one that has my fullest sympathy, because by the time Hollywood's accountants are through with them, they will be in full retreat toward the setting sun. I mention this story to show that in the United States, everything, in effect, is the property of great corporations who pay little or no tax to the federal government, much less to state and municipalities where they do business. The only surprising aspect of this story is that we were told to move on not by a security guard of Sony, but by the Culver City Police Department, openly working for a private corporation at the expense of its own public. The United States is unique among nations in that it was created by lawyers. Over the years, we have become more and more a government of, by, and for corporate lawyers, and they show no sign of vanishing from the earth. Currently, 70,000 lawyers are at work in Washington, D.C. as lobbyists, whose task it is to make sure that corporations pay little or no federal tax, while seeing to it that a majority of our money goes to certain corporations under the sacred rubric defense. There is very little place for non-lawyers in government. White House, Congress, and of course, judiciary, are filled with lawyers who create intricate laws that their sometime partners, the lobbyists, then work to undo, all quite legally. The people at large are kept firmly outside the legal loop, which is now beginning to resemble a hangman's noose. The brightest lawyers, of course, are lobbyists and outside the government. The not so bright but fairly nice looking lawyers are sent to Congress or even to the White House, where we have two for the salary of one. That's a bargain, I'd say. And they don't charge by the hour. This state of affairs is taken for granted by the media, which is owned by the same corporations that pay for the lawyers who govern us. Back of them, there is the 1% that owns most of the wealth of the country. Unfortunately, they are never seen on Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. Few citizens know their names. For the curious, I recommend Dollars and Taxes, as well as taking $797,000 in tax credits for the